Hello and welcome to this webinar from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name is Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the Business Marketing Club. The BMC is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, podcasts, training, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we've got well over 1,000 participants across the world. And if this is the first time you've joined us, you're really very, very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And if you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. This is the last of our webinars on how business marketers are dealing with change. We're living in a world of uncertainty with COVID-19, recession, and political and social conflict dominating our lives. And that calls for us to do business marketing differently now and also in the future. And over the course of this webinar series, we've been hearing from client side and agency side marketers in businesses, from startup to mature corporates, about topics ranging from changes in working practices to changes in purpose and culture, brand, marketing strategy, messages and channels. And we'll be hearing from more great speakers today who'll be sharing their experiences and offering their advice. And we called the series, we could have called the series, I suppose, Share and Offer, but then we landed on the rather more catchy Show and Tell. So today we'll be hearing from speakers on the impact of change on digital in B2B marketing, taking a online approach to business, on indirect channels, on account-based marketing, and much, much more. As you listen, type a question or comment into the questions box, and I'll put your questions and comments to the speakers after we've heard from them all. If you represent a business that has a B2B marketing project or role that you'd like to ask for help in filling from the community on this call, drop some details in the questions box and I'll mention it at the end of this webinar. Please also flag in the questions box if you'd like to be a speaker at a future BMC webinar, write about this one, or find out more about the BMC, and I'll be in touch. You can tweet along to today's webinar using the hashtag BMCShowTell. That's BMCShowTell. So enough of my preamble. Let's get started. Our first speaker today is Ash Coleman-Smith. Ash has spent 20 years working in marketing and advertising agencies, and the last 10 as CMO in the world of B2B marketing, most recently at Fladgate. Today, he's talking about the impact of digital transformation on marketing. Ash, welcome to the webinar, and over to you.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Dave. And it's great to join everybody virtually to see people today, and also to talk to people on the podcast that I know this is going out on. It seems like a long time since I actually attended one of these events in the flesh. A very long time. So, let's talk about that, because you know it was at least 7 or 8 months, and those 7 or 8 months have been pretty amazing for all of us. We've changed in many different ways, particularly work habits, and I guess what I wanted to talk about today was a couple of moments for me in April, May, as I was reacting to all the change and getting my head around, you know, what I should be doing on behalf of an interesting business that I'm now working with, and also a couple of insights that struck me as I worked my way through those sort of insights to start with a plan for the business moving forward, given all the change happening around it. And the first insight was, I'd better make sure, as a marketing person and as a strategy person on behalf of the firm, that I've really got my head around all the big data, really am using all the tools to understand, you know, clients, what the behaviors are on a website, what social listening tools, topic DNA and all the rest of it I should harness, and you know, begin to have another good look at everything going on in my CRM database, which needed dusting off, some corners needed some serious dusting off. And I realized I was becoming what I would describe as a sort of marketing digital astronomer. I was looking afar through my digital tubes at what was going on, and understanding, you know, in the case of professional services, our clients and customers. And, you know, the trend for me as a marketer was wow, you know, that there is a lot of opportunity to analyze and dissect from a distance. The second trend was that I was joining, you know, a few client conversations, and certainly joining lots of other conversations with people talking to prospects and prospects. And life was getting up close and personal. So, you know, this very instance is quite a good example of that. I've never had 2,000 marketing people in my spare bedroom before. You know, that's a first for me. And, you know, I've been equally invited into your rooms as well today. You know, we've all experienced Zoom meetings where dogs appear and kids sort of fly in from left to right. And the ability to interact and get to know people has got much more personal. Interestingly, just at a time for me, I think, when people have got a little bit more wary of some of those digital tools that promise engagement and loyalty, you know, chatbots and retargeting, programmatic advertising, and, you know, constant pop-up requests for feedback. So with those two trends in mind, you know, a thought struck me, you know, as I worked my way through what I needed to do and the best way to attack the problem of re-equipping ourselves as a business. And that thing was that I needed to both be an astronomer, but also I needed to get up close and personal. I needed to harness some of those digital tools, but not as an end in themselves. And it had become as I got into the problem, too much of a preoccupation to try and analyze and look at big data. And I needed to step back and realize it had an end. And that end was to build personal, proper relationships with clients. And I was missing a chance, given the other trend of the ability to step into, you know, into our clients and customers' worlds, to really harness things the right way. So I had three objectives. I wanted first to improve the ability of marketing at a time of huge change in the world of our clients and customers. I wanted to see if I could harness digital tools to improve the customer experience. And I wanted to harness digital tools to come up with some new, let's call them digital and social service and product solutions. And by the time I got to June, July, it had struck me very strongly that while I was building a better understanding and impression of what was going on online with all of my clients and how they were behaving and data was coming in, I hadn't actually had connectivity with our clients in a personal conversation in their bedroom, as it were, and neither had I harnessed and engaged my partners, or in some cases, you know, for some people who work in businesses that have sales teams or account managers, you know, neither had I engaged those people that had that one-to-one experience with clients. So the switch for me was to realize, and by the way, this isn't something that we've reached yet. I think we've reached the point at which we've started to think about how we rebuild some of the marketing, digital marketing structures, but we are yet to get to a point as a business where we actually do a number of things that I think could help develop a better customer experience and new products and capabilities. So switching from an understanding at a distance as an astronomer to now stepping into the bedrooms of our clients and doing things like co-creation. And I know that some people are a little bit concerned about co-creation because you can end up with solutions like Boaty McBoatface. But Henry Ford famously said, you know, if you'd ask his customers what they wanted, they would have said faster horses. But the ability of businesses to build personal relationships and engagement in their bedrooms and co-create with them and perhaps with groups of them in a conversation that I don't think would have been possible to have had prior to lockdown and this new world of people sort of somehow feeling closer because we are getting closer on screen, means that co-creation and our ability to work with our clients to develop new products and services is potentially at new heights. And I experienced that in the agency world. It was often working with clients that new products emerged and you then amortize them. They were always the best solutions. The ones that came up in a brainstorm and then tried to launch to the market were always the slowest to be adopted. And secondly, I think, you know, the ability as a marketing team, as we get into those conversations, to help and understand how the service delivery can be improved. And, you know, my experience, for instance, working with a web agency and developing websites, some of the tools they use, you know, we've all experienced them, Jira, Envision and others, Slack, you know, some of those tools that aren't necessarily being adopted in the service that we actually deliver as a professional services business was the other solution that I'm realizing we need to talk to clients with and test with them rather than just impose on them. So all of that adds up, I think, to a moment for me where I realised I needed to be both understanding things at a distance, but up close with our clients and with our customers. I've done the at a distance thing, and we now need to get up close and work with in my case, because we're a law firm, with partners who have the customer engagement. To talk to some groups of clients and really get under their skin. As I say, I feel personally that's a much less daunting and difficult challenge, strangely, in the current environment we're in, because interestingly, our clients and customers seem much, much more happy to invite us into their houses and have that conversation. So that summarizes where I'm at. Hopefully some of that journey is useful
to people. Thanks, Ash. It's great to hear from you, and it's good to have you in my bedroom. If anyone's got any questions for Ash, please do put them in the questions box and we'll get to them at the end. But I want to come in a moment to our second speaker. Still to come, by the way, the potential of indirect channel marketing, the challenges of video marketing, the impact of doubling down on ABM. But let's get to our second speaker, Samantha Moses. Samantha has 8 years experience working as a client side B2B marketer, most recently in SaaS and software. Her passion topic is strategic communications, particularly for global or multilingual organizations. And today, Samantha's going to talk about increasing engagement in online events in a world of online fatigue. Samantha, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Hi, Dave. Thank you. And hi to everybody listening. As Dave mentioned, so I'm the UK marketing manager for a French project management software company called Plannersware. My role as marketing manager for the UK is essentially one of localization of the strategy and basically translation of all the content and the techniques that have so far been very successful for Plannersware in France and across Europe, and applying all of that to the UK marketplace. So in terms of marketing, but also extending to the sales channels as well. One of our most obvious disruptions due to COVID was, of course, our events calendar. I think probably everybody can sympathise with that. So a large part of planners were strategies for, well, for lead generation, for analyst channel relations, for customer satisfaction, training, and even in some cases, brand awareness, revolved around events. After COVID, obviously, we all started working from home, offices were empty, everything was cancelled, and that was great fun trying to scramble to recoup our marketing budget, and that's still going on, and then, you know, trying to refill our calendar with things that would deliver on those objectives that we had wanted to achieve throughout the year. So yeah, that's been great. It's been a learning curve for sure. And the result in the short term, sort of from March to June kind of time, was inevitably some of those events, those live events, shifted to basically online versions of themselves. And there was not a huge lot of, you know, thought or strategy behind it. We just essentially kind of scrambled and said, right, let's just do a meeting online, or we'll host a webinar, and, you know, that will be it, that will solve the problem. But we're obviously really missing something. We all know that feeling of being completely overwhelmed by the sheer amount of online content that there is out there at the moment. You know, how can we stand out? All of our competitors were doing exactly the same thing. And what we really wanted to avoid was the situation of people kind of signing up to interact with us, whether it was customers, leads, prospects, you know, or just interested in our online content, just signing up in order to get the recording, and then kind of not interacting with us, or maybe not watching the recording, or not really interacting at all, and not necessarily getting what they need. So it was a slog. And as I've said, at the kind of March to June, it was, we had some quite awkward sessions where you could hear a pin drop, and the level of interaction that you would normally get face to face was just not there. So we really had to rethink what we were doing. And since then, you know, I've discovered a few little techniques that have helped us along the way. You know, possibly some of the listeners may have already heard of some of these and may want to comment on it as well, or contribute some of their own. But one of the really nice positives that's come out of it for us was that previously kind of annual events or one-off events have turned into sort of ongoing year-long conversations, because it's all that we've set up these platforms that have enabled us to continue the conversation. So things like our user conferences or training sessions, rather than just people meeting up once a year, we've got this online community to just have this year-round conversation. So yeah, I think, you know, the tips that we found can apply to any kind of event, whether you're the host or whether you're going as a sponsor to some kind of online, you know, trade show type of thing. We could be talking about a recorded or a live webinar, a roundtable, a panel discussion, an online trade show, or, you know, a complete online series of case studies or virtual trainings, which we have done two of since March. I would say the main one, the top tip for how we've managed to get better engagement is by increasing the segmentation, and making sure that the content that we provide is not just purely based around product and, you know, sales heavy things. So don't treat the content as if it's a broadcast. It needs to be educational, as I said, not too producty, and just segmenting your customer base, if it's a customer event, as much as possible, so that the things that you're saying to people are relevant to them, and you're not just speaking to a faceless crowd, which can sometimes be tempting, I think, when you're doing a webinar, is to kind of talk to people, a crowd as one. I think that limits interaction, and people tend to hide behind their screens and maybe don't share webcams or don't interact with you. So really just, you know, breaking it down, possibly doing more events if you need to, and breaking it down to make it as personal as possible. Another tip we found was making you, it's kind of what Ash has mentioned, of harnessing the digital tools that are out there and using them in different ways. So there's a lot of really interesting solutions out there to kind of replicate that live in-person sort of environment. which one of my favorites is something called Wonder Me, which is I'm nothing to do with them, but I just think it's really great. You kind of like, you can move around your little avatar and kind of bump into people as if you would in a real life situation and like start a chat with them. And it's just like a cool little feature that we found to be really useful, and it encourages people to chat to you. You can also set up things like online forums. So we've created our own online forum, and then, you know, another way of doing that could be like a LinkedIn page or channel or group or something, and anything that you do on your online event, you push and continue the conversation as part of that channel. You can introduce gamification into those type of things. So with our online forum, we award points for first comment or most interesting comment, comment with the most votes. We would then extend that to taking anything that we can offline. So if someone wins in the game of the interaction on the platform, we will send them some kind of little mini prize or swag. So it's kind of the idea of taking as much offline as possible and making it a physical reality where and when you can. I think that has really helped us. So we've got a customer forum at the moment, which has really taken off. It's actually something that we could have done previously, and I think this situation has pushed us into doing it. It's actually worked really well. So we're just getting a lot of, it's a great place to see interaction with our customers and just hear from them. And they get really into, you know, continuing conversations and trying to win with this kind of like a social media upvoting type of feature. That's been a really good feature for us. And probably the one lesson learned I'll finish on with the tips is that learning that people are human, and that we did something that was like a virtual coffee room, thinking that we could just host it and people would turn up and just chat, and they don't. They hide their screens, they don't say anything, they kind of, people expect a script, I think. And we didn't really do too well with that. It needs to be very well prepared. A way of encouraging people to speak, it's not the same online as it is in person. So this idea of a coffee break where we would all turn up and we had these expectations of everyone just chatting away, didn't really work for us. We found that, you know, preparation is everything in terms of making sure you have a really strong message before you turn up. Ultimately for us, the success of, you know, revamping our tools and the segmentation and just the way that we ran things has been that we've had a much improved level of interaction. And secondly, we have then managed to continue our conversations after the event. And just rather than them being standalone events, we've got this online community, particularly with our customers, but then also with our prospects on LinkedIn, which continue throughout the year. And that has actually been quite a big benefit to us. And it's not just a stand-in for the live events. It's actually been an improvement. So that for us has been, really interesting. I'll finish with that, because that was, I've got more tips, but they go far too much in detail, and I'm aware that I'm probably running out of time. I think have we lost Dave?
Yeah, I think we've lost Dave. I don't know who was next, but or whether Dave will want to introduce, or whether whoever's next introduces themselves.
that'll be me then.
Okay, thanks, Glenn, over to you.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Seamless, pretty seamless segue into the next speaker. So very good. Okay, well, as I'm sure Dave would have said quite well, that I'm Glenn Robertson, CEO of Pure Channels. We're a dedicated channel marketing agency, and I've been in business working solely providing services to the indirect channel for 15 years now. So today I'm going to speak about essentially the opportunity that has been presented on an ongoing basis, but it's absolutely been amplified this year. I don't really want to spend too much time talking of COVID or the new normal or unprecedented times, because I think we're probably all a bit sick of that. We're here. It is what it is. So let's jolly well crack on, I say. I've written a lot quite recently and spoken quite a lot around the fact that 2020 has been the year that the channel switched on digital. Essentially, we can refer back to what's happened this year as a response, but actually the opportunity is huge. The future is full of opportunity, and that it doesn't actually matter whether you're an agency or a vendor, whether you're client side. So, you know, just quickly then, the indirect channel that I speak of, what is it? Well, for a start, it's not an industry. It's not a method. It's a model. It's a go-to-market model, and it works across all industries. Almost everything, in fact, that we buy comes via the indirect channel. Typically, stuff we buy gets to us in two different ways. And this is anything we buy in person, anything we buy in business, typically comes in two different ways, either directly or indirectly. And Jay McBain from Forrester, he speaks of anything up to the 80% of the world's channel. The world's trade, sorry, actually comes through the indirect channel. And typically the channel has existed predominantly in the past on, as Sam mentioned, an awful lot of face-to-face interaction. So it would be on events, on exhibitions, on conferences, on conventions, and people and organizations working in the indirect channel, vendors, distributors, and all types of partner, essentially work and is dominated by that face-to-face interaction. So, this year has changed that massively because those events just simply stopped. What happened was the indirect channel, the partners, the vendors, the distis had to think of alternative ways of doing things, and hence the opportunity. Not only have we seen a change to what's happened, but we've seen a massive opportunity appear. The channel, again, also historically, and those of you who have experience in the channel will know that it's typically seen as the poor, neglected, less popular sibling, and has always been treated like that because there's always a cooler, funkier, trendier, new buzzwordy sibling over on the direct side that everybody wants to chat with and talk about and spend money on. But what we've done this year is we've been given the opportunity for the neglected sibling to catch up. And essentially the world of digital and the world of social and the world of an alternative has opened up purely because it's had to. The channel has had to catch up and it's done that this year simply because it's had to. Microsoft CEO said it early on. He said that, 2 years of digital transformation is now taking place within 2 months, and we're seeing that absolutely. And I think vendors in client side in all industries have a new need to engage, they have a new need to educate, and they have a new need to enable their reseller partners and the way that they go to market on the indirect side, and partners who are the lifeblood of the indirect channel because they basically sell all the vendor stuff for them. They are required more and more now to be more demanding of their vendor partners and indeed their distributors, many of whom actually fund or provide funds via something called MDF to the partners. So the partners should absolutely be more demanding, and that opens up a new opportunity. So really, I guess the key to this is it doesn't matter if you're an agency. So if you're listening to this from the agency side, or if you're listening to this on the client side, there are actually three things that present the biggest opportunity that we've seen in the indirect channel for many, many years, and probably will not see again. And those three things I did that. That's two. Three. Doesn't matter on the podcast. No one can see it. Yeah, those three things all happen to begin with E. They're part of a model that we've created at Pure Channels, having done this for so many years. But the three key first and most important ones are engagement, education, and enablement. So if you're an agency and you deal in almost any industry, it doesn't really matter what it is, whether it's tech or telecoms or finance, retail, automotive, manufacturing, luxury goods, whatever it may be, there is an indirect go-to-market piece there. And if you've got third-party sellers in any shape or form, and you've got clients that work in any of those industries, almost all of the industries that run trade throughout the world, there's a massive opportunity for you there to extend your portfolio of services in order to help those clients get the most out of their indirect channel. And if you're a vendor, if you're client side, the opportunities for you to engage and educate and enable your partners are super important now, probably now more than ever, because partner experience has to be absolutely the top of the priorities for vendors, and how to help partners go to market with your message is the sole fundamental thing that will see you benefit. And those vendors or those clients that don't switch on to the needs of their partners are going to be the ones that fail, and the ones that do are going to be the ones that are delivering the 2 years of digital transformation in 2 months, and they're going to be way ahead. So I guess to finish, it's fair to say that there does exist probably a hugely untapped opportunity both on the agency side and on the client side, and that is genuinely realizing the power of the indirect channel and how to engage, educate and enable partners to be able to do that. Thanks very much, Dave. Welcome back,
Glenn, and thank you for starting and kind of seamlessly linking from Samantha there. I'm really grateful to you for that. And what I heard of your session was great. I'll be listening back on playback tomorrow afternoon. Still to come, we've got look at dialing down on ABM. But first of all, let's move to video marketing. And our fourth speaker is Gurmit Samra, who is the writer, producer and director of Impress Video. Gurmit, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Hey, thank you so much for having us and thank you for the insight so far, guys. Yeah, it's been an interesting time, as many people say. March, April impacted us massively because we tend to provide a lot of video content for other agencies as well. We partner with a lot of companies across the UK. And come March, April, we were at the bottom of people's priority list when it came to marketing, especially when using video, because live filming wasn't a thing because of COVID and restrictions and lockdown. It was a scary time, as it was for many agencies, but it gave us time to hone in on our own content, our own marketing, our own systems and processes. And refining that was interesting because we were able to revisit a lot of our, when you're inundated with project work, you very rarely get to work on your own content that you want to create as a creative. And it gave us that time, we had a month or two where we were creating thought leadership videos and we really refined the areas that we focused on in our service sector. What was interesting was everything took a flip. Where we do a lot of corporate video, that then flipped to animation. Where we did a lot of TV adverts, that then flipped to product video. And then the third service, which we'll come to in a second, was just, you know, they talk about pivoting and having the ability to have a think tank group and pivot. I've heard that word a lot, but I think for us, it was a case of the market deciding what they wanted from us. And in that, a lot of our clients came back for animation video, and animation was a very small part of our intake, so to speak, of the end of the accounting year, but now it's taken up 89%. Product video, you know, I'm a big fan of Amazon, as a lot of people are. They like to shop, but I really, you know, we always knew that our clients liked Amazon video, you know, were producing that as well as their own e-commerce websites, but that just went through the roof for us. And it forced us to, you know, expand our studio, create a white room, create a studio setting, as opposed to using the third-party studios and what have you. So there were demands on our studio during this time. And I think having that two-month gap of losing a lot of client work allowed us to refocus on what was emerging in the markets. And then there was the event of, you know, Zoom calls. Now, we've all been in endless Team, Skype, Zoom, this is webinar, we've lost count of them, and everyone's got a different preference. But it wasn't until a client said to us that, you know, I have an array of clients that who paid for, you know, paid for an online training session, and they've paid £400-£500 for the experience. But now everything's gone online, we want your equipment, we want professional cameras, lights, and sound and everything to be in a studio. And then you have a light bulb moment, a little bit slow to the party. But it's interesting how these companies are now using the latest technology to separate themselves from other people, because this is a familiar setup. We all want in our rooms, we all want in our private spaces doing our Zoom calls. But a lot of these companies now are wanting that professional look to be able to, what can I say, they're getting used to now. This is going to be the new norm. Jenny didn't want to refer to that, but this is the new norm now for our meetings. And as you were saying something else earlier on about better engagement and yourself as well, Samantha, to have those interactions where it is a more personalized experience. But what I find a lot of companies are doing now is, especially exhibition workers who specialize in virtual training and exhibitions, is they are providing a more professional looking service as opposed to just a webcam in a room. And that's been great for us. We've been able to diversify in that. And we've been, you know, we do a lot of videos for straight to consumer and B2B. An interesting one for us has been, you know, we had a client who pitched a project to us. Again, we need a training video for our clients. Now, again, our clients specialize in whether it's recruitment, software, training, and what have you. And they pitched a client to this, to chat Chris, pitched a client a project to me, and I wrote a brief down, a paragraph, sent it back, and never heard anything. And then I sent an outline of an image, so to speak, a vector of what the project could look like. I got a thumbs up and with a proposal to meet at some point and discuss this, you know, on an email. And then it went a bit quiet. And then what I did was I brought that vector to life and created an animation and put my voiceover on it. Now, these things usually take time. You don't really have, you don't always have time to create things like this that are engaging, that have that impact. But it wasn't until I put my voiceover on it and made the animation move into a short 30-second video pitch and I put it back to the client that I got a call straight away, Gurmit, can we organize a Teams meeting? And I realized that, you know, we have got a number of clients that we work with. And something that I highly recommend to clients is that if you've got a number of clients that you already work with, you need to re-engage with them. You need to add that personal touch again. You need to take a video, have a short introduction to yourself before you're introducing the pitch. And this sort of level of engagement made us realize that, as well as getting new clients in and attracting new clients, the importance of showing your face, showing the pitch through video form, especially from us from a video production company, was really key in terms of engagement. So this sort of time has seen us switch, has seen a big switch in our services and what is becoming really popular. And it's also given us thought for the way we approach our creative briefs. And another thing is there's a lot of training and consulting we're offering now, because this seems to be the new normal. You know, there's tips on composition of camera, there is tips on the right sound, the right camera to have, the lighting techniques. You all look great on camera, but there's little tweaks that everyone could do to have that more of a professional look, as opposed to showing too much headroom and too much. There's so much. It's interesting how, like you were saying, Glenn, you know, it's flipped in 2 months. I've had the importance of digital and this sort of environment. So for us, it's been an interesting year, and it's been a winning year in that respect, in the sense of consultations, in terms of services being flipped, and yeah, it's just been a really interesting year for us.
Gurmit, thank you so much. It's great to hear from you. If anybody's got questions for any of our speakers, Ash, Samantha, Glenn, Gurmit, and in a moment, Matthew, please do ping them into the questions box and we'll get to them right after our final speaker. Matthew Kent works in the UK marketing organisation for a global enterprise software company that targets the world's largest and most complex organisations. Today, he's talking about the outcome of doubling down on ABM. Matthew, welcome to the webinar and over to you.
Thank you, Dave. It's my second time that I've been invited to speak on this. So it's a real pleasure to be here today. So as Dave mentioned, my name is Matthew Kent. I'm a senior marketing manager in the UK for a leader in cloud software for customer engagement and operational excellence called Pega, or Pega Systems to give us our full name. We're a US-based or US-headquartered company out of Boston. And I think, you know, 2020 has been a difficult year in many respects, but fortunately for me as a marketer in Pega, I think we've had a pretty good year. You know, luckily in marketing, we haven't seen a huge impact in terms of our budgets, reining in of our activities. I think we're one of the very few companies where we believe in the power of marketing in terms of building a brand, creating the right environment for sales. And I think ABM, which is kind of my passion, is kind of one of the foremost ways that we're looking to continue that into 2021 and beyond. So I'm really passionate about ABM. I think Pega as an organization is ripe for ABM. Why? Because Pega, we have quite a defined target account list globally. I think our global target account list is probably 600 or 700 organizations. What we sell is very complex, typically a long sales cycle, you know, nine to 15 months. It involves a dozen or more different influences and decision makers. And, you know, we make a conscious decision to sell to a small number of verticals and typically the largest organizations in those verticals. We focus on banking, insurance, telecommunications, manufacturing, healthcare, and government. So when it comes to ABM, this is called show and tell. So hopefully me telling everyone who's on today and who's listening to this podcast what I'm doing, hopefully you'll be able to pick up a few things in terms of how you could apply it to your own organization. So there are four initiatives I want to talk about that we're focusing on right now and as we look into 2021, and hopefully there's three or four themes that will come across quite clearly as I describe these initiatives. So those themes being focus, sales and marketing collaboration. You hear a lot about sales and marketing alignment. I'm not against the term alignment, but I think alignment to me implies that there's some common understanding. I think you've actually got to turn understanding into action. So I kind of like to use the word collaboration and fourthly, kind of prioritization. So the first thing we talk about that we're working on when it comes to account-based marketing, you know, I'm fortunate to have completed the ITSMA account-based marketing certification this year. It was done virtually. Fantastic course for anyone who really wants to get under the skin of the theory, the academic side of account-based marketing, and you get to work with some fantastic people like Bev Burgess and Louise Jefferson. So can't recommend it highly enough. So when it comes to account-based marketing, the first thing that we've really doubled down on is what we call must-win deal support, or another way of articulating it would be deal-based marketing. So we work extremely closely with our VP of sales to identify every quarter for the next kind of three or four quarters out the key deals that he's relying on to meet his bookings goal. So when with that alignment, we get our visibility two or three quarters out, and we spend a fair chunk of our marketing budget. I want to say almost two thirds or maybe three quarters of our marketing budget on providing marketing to support to the account teams that are working on those must-win deals. We're lucky to partner with two or three agencies that provide services, rapid services in the form of presentation design, stakeholder profiling, organogram creation, video creation. So you're gearing ourselves around those must-win deals, being able to turn things out rapidly and quickly, and supporting those account executives on working on those deals is something that we've really, really focused on. And I don't think that's going to go away. So that kind of really fosters that alignment. It fosters that kind of prioritization. And I encourage other marketers to look to do that if not doing so already. The other form of account-based marketing that we've been piloting this year is what kind of ABM academics might call kind of clustering or want a few. So typically it's taking a cluster of organizations, normally kind of 10 to 15 organizations in the same industry or organizations facing the same challenges, and doing lots of research and insight into what's driving those organizations at industry level, at the company level, at the persona level, and building out a 3 to 6 month program. That program, we're targeting those programs right now into comms, so the 12 largest telcos in Europe and 12 of the largest insurance accounts organizations in Europe. And we're lucky to work with a really, really great kind of agency on that, who's driving everything end to end for us. So the upfront planning, strategy, workshops, messaging, value prop creation, asset creation, project management. As I said, we're fortunate to have an agency on tap that we can work with to drive that. What's that telling us? How's it helping sales? So from my perspective, we're trying to sell to very large, complex organizations, and oftentimes our account execs are having to foster relationships with very senior stakeholders. The objective of these programs isn't to necessarily create flashy, glossy brochures that an account exec can say, I've had this created for my account, isn't it great? We are trying to create the right sales environment for our account execs to have those conversations. We're doing that through social selling education, through some asset creation as well, where it makes sense, through doubling down on measuring what our CRM system is telling us, through looking at what content is working elsewhere, competitive insight, the effective use of LinkedIn Sales Navigator, for example, to look at who's trending up and down from an interest perspective. So I see that only continuing as we go into next year. I'll talk about kind of clustering or want a few approach to ABM. The third thing that's really focused for us, if you think about 2021, I'm sure like most people listening in, I've got abundance of holiday to use up before the end of the year. So I think my last working day of the year is actually going to be the 14th of December. But already we think about 2021 planning, and we're trying to be as data-driven as possible with those planning discussions. We're not short of data inside Pega. We have a wealth of data in our CRM system. We use Tableau extensively to help visualize that data and model it for us. And right now, actually, I've spent the best part of a day looking at data, so industry by industry, region by region, to look at where should marketing be investing its time and effort next year. I talked about supporting must-win deals, but if you ask the salesperson, would you like marketing support? Of course, they're going to say yes. We as marketers, as we go into next year with fairly limited resources and time, we need to have opinions, and those opinions need to be data-driven. So my tip for marketers is use the data that's available to you. Don't be scared to have an opinion with a sales leader. Challenge them in a positive way. And it's crucial to have speak a common language. I think all too often for us as marketers, it's so easy to use marketing jargon. I've talked about strategic ABM and cluster ABM. Those terms mean nothing to salespeople. If you talk about strategic ABM, talk about how we're going to help you over the next 1 to 3 years, broaden and deepen the level of executive relationships you've got. We're going to help create the right sales environment for you. What salesperson cannot understand that or turn that down? Or if we're taking a cluster approach to account-based marketing, we're going to work with you for the next 3 to 6 months to help you make inroads into that account that you've really struggled to make inroads to with. So I think being cautious not to use marketing jargon when you're speaking to sales, particularly around planning and key initiatives, is key as well. And thirdly, social selling support. I'm a field marketer. I'm a generalist. I'm a consultant. I'm not a digital marketing or social selling expert. But I think, social selling in the absence of physical events, with the abundance of virtual events, I think is becoming even more important. We're supporting our account teams through the curation and creation of content. We're supporting them by measuring, benchmarking and measuring outcomes. I think one of the key lessons I've learned is unless you can prove a tangible outcome of an account executive's time and effort, it's hard to get their attention and long-term commitment. So benchmarking their LinkedIn SSI scores, benchmarking how many first-degree connections they've got in their accounts, and then reviewing that on a week-by-week or month-by-month or quarter-by-quarter basis helps you prove that the effort they're investing is a good use of time. So I'm probably way over my 5 minutes, Dave, but those are the kind of key things that I'm particularly focusing on from an account-based marketing perspective and from a 2021 perspective at this stage of the year.
Matthew, Ken, really good to have you back on the webinar. Thanks very much, mate. So we've heard now from our five speakers, and let's get a round of questions in. So we heard from Ash, first of all, around the increased requirement for personalization in his approach to marketing since lockdown. I guess my question for you, Ash, would be, would you say that your lessons from lockdown two are different to your lessons from lockdown one? So, you know, from lockdown one, it was very much let's be the marketing astronomer, but also let's get more personal. By lockdown two, we're kind of all getting a bit weary, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the irony I was trying to highlight was it's so easy to mistake all those. And there are lots of really good tools, lots of digital tools that look like solutions in their own right to building personal relationships. Whereas the reality is you should start by talking and then think very carefully about how some of those tools will play into a relationship that you're building. Don't cut the cloth before you've measured the person you're making the suit for. I think, you know, as you've heard from Matthew, that, you know, that's the same with account-based marketing. You know, you want to spend a lot of time collaborating to really understand the client before you sort of try and force, you know, different solutions, whether that's marketing collateral or digital solutions on into the situation.
Cool. Okay. And I will take on your lesson about cutting cloth accordingly. Thank you. Samantha, it was great to hear from you about the impact on online events at this time. And I've certainly picked up a few tips from what you gave us there. So thank you very much for that. I guess my question here for you would be, do you vary the tips that you apply according to things like the level of audience that you're going after, the industry sector that you're going after, in terms of the events that you're running? Would you apply different tools for different audiences? Can you give us a bit of a sense of which are the most applicable tools for a senior maybe versus a middle management audience?
Yeah, I would say probably more than seniority, we tend to diversify it depending on the objectives that we're working on. So whether it's you know, like a lead gen type of objective, then we tend to focus more on the familiar, easy access, like LinkedIn type of tools to extend that community. Whereas when we're talking about the more customer engagement and retention side of things, then we tend to focus more on the things that require a little bit more involvement from them. You know, we can ask a bit more of them, preparation in advance. So that's when I tend to go towards those newer tools that I mentioned, such as WonderMe, where you can really, it's kind of the stuff that Gurmit has mentioned, where you can really kind of elevate the production quality as well of what you're doing. That's when we tend to spend a little bit more time at the moment on really elevating the production when it comes to those type of engaged sort of further along the funnel or customers, people that we can kind of ask more of when it comes to engagement. There's a lot more that we can do in terms of preparation. We can actually, if we want a customer, for example, to speak for us, we can ship out, you know, professional backing or audio visual equipment and things like that to them. But then in terms of, yeah, like the lead gen side of things, sometimes that isn't always applicable. Sometimes they want more snappier, quicker similar to this kind of meetings with sales. So it really depends on what the objective is, I think, and where, okay, what level of interaction the prospect or customer can give us.
Very cool. Glenn, I missed much of your session, I'm afraid, but I am intrigued by whether you think the die is cast as far as indirect channels are concerned now. Do you think that there's any retreat from the momentum towards the indirect channel?
I would say that the complete opposite. I think you know, the perception of the indirect channel, as I spoke of, was that of a neglected, ugly, ridiculous, horrible sibling that was never any good and could never be any good. But the reality is that sneakily, in the background, what it's doing is actually generating much more revenue for all organizations than the direct side. And yet, you know, now is the best time ever that clients and vendors can actually use all of the cool stuff that the cool, funky, trendy sibling did on the direct side and take it into the indirect side, right? Because this is about engaging with your partners and engaging and educating them and enabling them. And, you know, it seems relatively complex because there are a number of different layers that you have to go through. On the direct side, it's really quite easy because there's only one level of separation, but actually on the indirect side, it's far more complex and sophisticated because we have at least three levels of separation, because we have vendors, disties, and then partners, and all types of different partner. And therefore, we have to educate them, we have to market to them, we have to market through them, we have to market, sorry, brackets and sell, and we have to market for them, and we have to market with them. So actually it's, you know, it can appear to be quite complex, and therefore that's one of the reasons why it has been neglected. But the reality is it's really also quite simple, not quite as simple as it is on the direct side. But it is relatively simple because actually all we're doing is encouraging people to sell more stuff. And all we're doing it is in a slightly different way. On the direct side, we're building brand and we're doing all these wonderful things that, you know, Matt was talking about in terms of ABM. But guess what? In indirect, we can do ABM. We just call it PBM or CBM. We call it channel-based marketing, or we call it partner-based marketing, because we do it to them, through them, with them, and for them. You know, and that's where the complexity comes in. But in terms of digital access, you know, all of the same methods are actually to be used in the same way that they are to be used and are used on the direct side. It just takes a little bit of you know, additional knowledge, additional time, additional resource, you know, and far more than is currently budgeted for, and actually everybody wins. So the opportunity is massive, and actually more so than it ever has been.
Very good to hear. Gunnar, you spoke very, very eloquently, I thought, about the different approaches being made to video now than maybe at the start of the year. Do you think we're producing better videos?
I think organizations are thinking a lot more about the content they're creating. Like Samantha was saying, exhibition costs have been cut by a lot of companies, especially with a lot of clients that we work with who supply the NHS and who supply Network Rail and both, so to speak. You know, a lot of B2B companies, they don't have the chance to have an exhibition now, whether that's in the UK base, Europe base, or in America. So they've got a bit of a marketing spend which they need to direct online now. So companies are, we've seen a growth in companies consulting us in terms of how to create content that is consistent, that is engaging, that adds value, that has impact. They're taking a lot of social trends, you know, from social media, how these marketing agencies are connecting with the end users. And I think, what I know from what we've seen, that a lot of agencies are really giving thought to what they're producing, more geared towards the clients they've been serving in the past. So a lot more thought is going in. Well, they've got the time now. They've got the time and they've got the budget to really think about it. Nothing beats face-to-face interaction, but it's like, how do you replicate that in a digital world? Now, a lot of these big organizations are now looking to social media in that respect, and they're saying, how do we make engaging content? And that's especially what we found with content that we're creating for companies, given that how do we make this engaging, you know, consistent, and how it's almost like, how do we get more for our spend? And how do we convey all these messages? And how can we use this one video across numerous platforms to tick as many boxes as well? One of our clients based in the Midlands said, look, we need some collateral for our marketing, but it's also going to work for sales teams as well when they're pitching to clients online. And how do we pull skills from video? So there's a lot of conversations and a lot of thought going into these video projects now. And yeah, it's an insightful time.
Cool. And Matt, great to hear about the doubling down on ABM. I guess I was reflecting on the points that you were talking about there, focus, collaboration between sales and marketing, prioritization. And that also the things that I have heard you talk about kind of pre-lockdown as well. So I'm kind of wondering whether ABM actually has changed at all as a result of COVID, or are you just bullishly carrying on regardless?
Great question, Dave. I don't think it's changed. I think maybe the balance of tactics or the mix of tactics might have skewed more to more digital, but the principles remain the same. And in fact, you know, I wish, you know, I talked about, you know, the importance of partners with ABM. So, you know, Glenn, you know, was talking earlier about the importance of the channel. You know, we partner with the likes of you know, Accenture and EY, Deloitte, McKinsey. You know, we rely on them to, you know, to be, again, creating the right sales environment. I keep using that phrase, but to be evangelizing us and to be implementing our software. I think for us, I think the only thing that's changed really is that realization that, you know, yes, we need to be doing a better job of engaging with empathy with our clients, but the same principles apply to our systems integrator and our consultancy partners as well. There was a great session at the recent B2B Marketing ABM conference where I think it was a vendor, I can't remember the name now, either Click or Veeam, were presenting a case study about how they, you know, deployed an account-based marketing campaign to EY. The tactics didn't differ to what you would do to a campaign to a client or a prospect. It was the messaging. And yeah, so not changed. The principles remain the same. The balance of tactics skewed. So yeah, I think all in all, it's ABM is a very, really powerful tool for organizations like ourselves who are looking to, as I said, build the right sales environment and to foster those long-term relationships with their clients.
And what better way to end this than with a definitive statement like that? And that's it. Thanks to our brilliant speakers, to Ash Coleman-Smith, Samantha Moses, Glenn Robertson, Gurmit Samra, and Matthew Kent, and to our brilliant backroom team of Louise Neal, Claire Sheriff, Elise Bailey-Probert, Alex Horn, and Jay Neal. And most of all, thanks to you for listening and participating. You can listen again to this webinar from tomorrow, and we're back on the 9th of December with our final networking event of the year. I hope you can join us for that. Available to download now is our weekly podcast. This week, it's all about strategy. And if you sign up to be a member of the BMC, you can get access to all of our events and webinars, to our mentoring service for business marketers, to our white papers, and to our blogs free of charge. Details of all of that at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. And you can contact me if you want at davestevensnow@gmail.com. So on behalf of everyone here, thanks for listening and stay safe. All the best.
Thank you.